All right, good afternoon, everyone. I would call to order the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Welcome. This is our Medical Cannabis Day. We're going to hear several bills concerning medical cannabis. We will start with a roll call. Ms. Niedernhofer.
Chair Lieberman.
Present.
Vice Chair Hewitt.
Present.
Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher present.
Representative Ackland.
Ackland present.
Representative Backer.
Backer present.
Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Keel.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Kwan.
Present.
Representative Ryer.
Present.
Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Everyone is here. Quorum present.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Niedernhofer. Quorum is present. So the next order of business will be to approve the minutes of February 10th. Representative Hewitt?
Madam Chair, I move the minutes for February 10th.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, everyone, members, please unmute yourselves. All those in favor of approval of the minutes of February 10th, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion is approved. Thank you. So the first bill on our agenda today is House File 907. Representative Gomez, I saw that you're with us. Welcome to the committee. So the chair will move House File 907 to be recommended to be re-referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Committee. Committee with a nice long name. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Representative Gomez to describe her bill. I would like to say at the outset, however, if members have taken a look at this bill, most of the bill really pertains to the next committee that it'll go to, and perhaps even to the Judiciary Committee. So I'm going to ask that in this committee, the Health Committee, which has jurisdiction over the medical cannabis program, that although certainly Representative Gomez can describe her bill, but we're going to try to keep our discussion today to Section 1 of the bill, which is the section that pertains to this committee. So with that, go ahead, Representative Gomez. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I was going to mention that, so you covered some of my statement. So House File 907 is really about enhancing a couple of patient protections for those participating in the medical cannabis program. Members of this committee probably know that we've had a medical cannabis program that was established in 2014. It's kind of been rolling since 2015, and patients in Minnesota use cannabis to treat a number of conditions from, you know, seizure disorder to chronic pain to the kind of nausea and wasting that is sometimes associated with certain kinds of cancer. I'm just going to walk through the bill quickly. The first section, which is what we should primarily focus on today, amends the existing law to state that that those who are disqualified from participation in the medical cannabis program for violating some patient duties, they're currently, it's a lifetime ban, and this changes it so that they're able to reapply 12 months after the violation and kind of being excluded from the program. So there are a few things, a few kind of reasons that people get booted from the medical cannabis program. I think the main kind of one is about diversion, which is basically like, you know, using a product that is that was prescribed to them and giving it to another person. I spoke to a couple of medical cannabis patients, and one of them told me about a circumstance that they ended up in. So, like, they're a patient and their mother is a patient, and they have a caregiver who gave them cannabis, medical cannabis, to give to their mother, which seemed like a normal thing to do, but they were actually committing an act of diversion. So there are some instances in which diversion is pretty easy to do. There are certainly other cases in which people are intentionally kind of like subverting the guidelines of the program, which is why this is not an automatic reinstatement in the program. It just states that they are able to reapply in 12 months. And, you know, so the reason for this is really because, you know, I worked a lot on the adult legalization bill, and one of our main kind of goals of that bill was really about moving people who are currently in the illegal and unregulated cannabis market into a regulated market. And so when we implement lifetime bans for what in certain cases are a mistake or a relatively in kind of small violation of those patient guidelines, we really are moving people, forcing people to participate in the illicit market. And so that's not the intent of this program. So that's sort of the main part that concerns this, that's in the jurisdiction of this committee. Sections 2 and 3 are about retaliation and remedies, prohibiting schools, landlords, healthcare facilities, employers from retaliating against a patient for being enrolled in the cannabis program and using that substance. Section 3 establishes injunctive relief and action for damages, and Section 4 allows enrollment in the medical cannabis program to be an affirmative defense for a criminal charge. In 2019, this bill had a Republican author in the Senate. The advocates are currently working on Senate authorship, but are pretty confident that they'll be able to get a GOP member to sponsor it. Has bipartisan support in the House. And it's really just about adding teeth to protections that already exist in law, and creating a little bit of wiggle room in this place where we do a lifetime ban, which is sort of a draconian response, I would say. And with that, that's kind of the bill. I have a couple testifiers if we wanted to go to them.
Sure, absolutely. Let's go to the testifiers. I have on the list Brandon Borgos.
Madam Chair.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself. Tell us if you're affiliated with anyone, and then go ahead.
Yeah, certainly. Madam Chair Liebling, members of the committee, thank you for, first of all, hearing my testimony today in support of HF 907. As you've introduced me, my name is Brandon Borgos. I'm a Minneapolis attorney for a little over 10 years, co-founder of Sensible and Sensible Change Minnesota. I'm a former board member and their current advisory board chair. So I'm very grateful that this bill is getting a hearing today because it addresses a lot of the issues that Representative Gomez just highlighted. And those have been in place, those issues have been in place since the medical bill passed in 2014. Since then, clients and patients have faced this possibility of lifetime removal from the program. And I know we talked a little bit about the other sections here, retaliation for asserting their statutorily enumerated rights and falling through the program's cracks. But this legislation fills in a lot of those cracks, and it gives patients and their attorneys tangible ways to protect them. That said, one of the hardest things in my time as an advocate and an attorney in the last decade has been to explain to a client or patient that this is one of the collateral consequences at hand, that they could be facing a lifetime revocation of these protections that they're trying to avail themselves of. And that's why they're seeking the enrollment in the first place. Some of the situation that Representative Gomez alluded to, I've actually seen in my practice. And that's why I can look at this bill and sincerely say, you know, well done, because it aligns itself with what we value as a state. And I think that's empowering our citizens to learn from their mistakes rather than to say, you don't get to participate anymore. And I'm happy to answer questions about it. I think that Representative Gomez and others have done a great job in addressing these issues that have been present for well over 6 years now. And I'd like to also thank Committee Member Representative Munson and Representatives Edelson, Jordan, and Jung. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I just ask that you please support HF 907. So thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Borges. Sam Poquet, welcome.
Yes, thank you. Chair Liebling and members of the committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Sam Poquet, and I'm a medical cannabis patient who uses medical cannabis for PTSD and migraines. In December of 2019, about a week before Christmas, my door was broken down and house raided by law enforcement. They treated me like I was a monster. They put guns in my family's face and screamed obscenities in my home where my children live. It was the worst experience of my life. I was in possession of a small amount of flower and some medical cannabis oil from Vireo Health. I knew it was illegal to have flower. It's just the program is very expensive. I needed to supplement what I was able to buy legally. All of my medical cannabis was seized, and I was charged with a fifth-degree felony for possession of the oil I had purchased from Vireo. I was arrested, and I had to bail out of jail. I hired a lawyer, and I even had my children temporarily taken from my home. I had my life turned upside down. During pretrial, I learned that I could lose my ability to legally use medical cannabis. I was not sure if I would even be able to explain my cannabis use as medical, which further discouraged me from fighting the case. I felt cornered into pleading guilty to the felony charge, and as a result, I lost my right to vote, my job as a dual diagnosis rehabilitation worker, and my freedom. The incident has left me with much mental anguish, and I'm still struggling to find the right medication combination to address my now intensified PTSD issues. My symptoms. My use of medical cannabis makes me a better parent to gain, to be pain-free and be able to play with my children, to work and provide for my family. And I've even returned to school and maintain a 4.0 grade point average. Luckily, my probation officer has allowed me to continue using medical cannabis, but I know that not all patients are so lucky. Provisions included in House File 907 will protect future patients that may find themselves in similar circumstances. So I appreciate the opportunity to share my story with you today, and I hope that you support House File 907 and House File 813. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Poquet. I'm not seeing any members with hands up. I do have a question, maybe for Representative Gomez, if you know. First of all, I think we need to establish here that when patients are using medical cannabis, that they're not getting high from cannabis. Could you discuss that a little bit? I mean, this, obviously, our medical cannabis program came into being as a very restrictive program against the backdrop of having cannabis itself be illegal. And so it's a really strange beast how we try to recognize the therapeutic benefits of cannabis and have this program be separated from what I would call personal use of cannabis, right? But I think one of the big differences is that, cannabis has different, different parts of the plant, right? It's different compounds. That's the word I'm looking for. And so I think we just need to establish here that patients are not using this as a way to get high. Can you speak to that, Representative Gomez?
Thank you, Chair Liebling. And I really appreciate you bringing up those issues. I think a couple of them are actually addressed in the other bills that your committee is hearing today. But to your point, there are, and I think that Mr. Poquet can kind of speak to this, that there are complexes of symptoms that are resistant to traditional medical treatment, or that something like PTSD, right, is and migraines even. Sometimes traditional medications don't address those issues. And, so you hear from patients about the different kind of properties of cannabis acting on their syndromes in different ways. And it really isn't about intoxication in any respect. Just as, you know, somebody who uses a prescription painkiller is not generally, it's not about intoxication. It's about actually like treating the symptoms of the kind of underlying condition. So I think that's really important to establish is that, you know, you hear certainly from, I mean, one of the most striking things, right, is about seizure disorders in children. I don't know if I certainly have had constituents reach out to me and tell me kind of about, you know, the way that that medical cannabis, unlike any other sort of pharmaceutical answer to this condition, really like gives somebody with a seizure disorder control of their life back, and that kid's not getting intoxicated. That's not the impact that they're after, of course. So thank you for that.
Okay, I'm going to go to Representative Gernhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I have a question for Representative Gomez. Actually, it's from a staff member. It says, I don't think the changes made by this bill would allow or wouldn't allow MDH to deny someone for gratuitous violations of the anti-diversion statute. Can you speak to that?
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Liebling, and thank you for the question, Representative Grunhagen. So yeah, as I mentioned in when I was introducing the bill, this doesn't do an automatic reinstatement. It doesn't change the application process. The Department of Health is still in a position where they are able to evaluate an individual application that they receive from somebody. This just removes that lifetime ban for any that can be put in place for any violation of the patient responsibilities. And so yeah, if there were a case of, you know, chronic violation of the diversion standard, that would certainly be grounds to not re-grant enrollment in the program to a patient who had flouted those.
Representative Bierman?
No, I had one more question, Madam Chair.
Well, we'll come back to you, Representative Gernhagen. Representative Bierman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Gomez, for bringing the bill forward. I think that this discussion and this bill, as you noted, just sort of highlights some of the issues facing people in the program. And I just had a question for Mr. Poquette, and thank you for being here and telling us your story. I guess I just have a question of, you know, with all the things that have happened, what are your immediate prospects for redress on this point? And I presume, you know, that the use of medical cannabis was not your first prescription for some of the issues you're dealing with. It's usually not. It's something that people find works, and then you go to it, and it is very expensive. I've heard this from numerous people, so I appreciate you coming before the committee and telling us a real-life story, but I just wanted a little bit more on what's your prognosis for getting your voting rights back? What's the prognosis for you to get back on this program, if ever? How stiff are the penalties, and how long-lasting?
Yeah, and Representative Bierman, before he answers that, Mr. Poquette, if you could kind of keep it to the pieces before the bill. I mean, the voting rights pieces. Sorry, Representative Bierman, it's a little outside the scope here, but, you know, I think just in terms of the treatment aspect of it. Go ahead, Mr. Poquette.
The question was, what have I tried besides cannabis, is my understanding?
Madam Chair,
Representative Bierman.
Yes, I was just curious. I mean, I'm sure that there were other things that you tried that this you found worked better for you.
Yeah. For about 2 years before enrolling in the medical program, I tried therapy, and I still do. I still do therapy with it, but I tried therapy. I tried, you know, a couple different medications. I spent 2 years trying to find it a different way, and the entire time was a struggle, it was a time of, you know, difficulty, you know, working difficulty, you know, just being myself even. I mean, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, Madam Chair, yeah, that certainly answered the first question. I just was still curious of whether or not you have an ability to get back into the program.
So I was fortunate enough to not be kicked off the program.
Oh, you are.
But I'm still advocating for, you know, others that aren't as fortunate as I was at my outcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All right. Yes. Thank you, Representative Bierman. So I'm going to call on Representative Backer, then Representative Grunhagen, then we're going to vote on the bill. Representative Backer?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Question for the representative, and maybe agency could ask this. Currently, what has to happen or what challenges come about for a person to get kicked off this program and so forth? You know, the medical one, or I guess a better question actually is what prevents people from getting on that program? That would be a better question. What would prevent a person from becoming a candidate for the medical cannabis program?
Representative Gomez?
Charlie Blaine. I'm sorry, Representative Backer, are you talking about like initially when they first apply to?
Yes, like let's say I want to apply. If I hit A, B, C, I'm not getting on the program. You know, like we had a testifier who had that challenge. I'm assuming it's some type of a criminal record. I don't know what those parameters are.
Representative Gomez, can Chair a criminal Lee, record keep you out?
I wonder if I can call on if there's anybody from the department who can go through all of the requirements for enrollment initially.
Okay, and let's see, is there anybody here from the program? I'm not sure. Okay, here there is somebody from yeah, welcome. And if you could just, you know, I don't know that we want to go back through the entire program. I think that Representative Backer is trying to focus on understanding, you know, when this ban would, you know, if there are people who are disqualified who, for some reason other than medical, other than not meeting the medical pieces, and, you know, let's keep it to that rather than going through all the things you could, that could help you get on the program.
That's fair.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Focus, and I'm the director of the Office of Medical Cannabis at MDH. So thank you for your questions. I would like to state that we have not actually revoked any patient from our program to date. So there's that. And I think that as far as the question from Representative Backer, only something like making false statements as part of your application would be grounds for not being admitted to the program. Otherwise, it's just the standard points to our process as far as filling out the application, being certified for your condition, those basic steps.
Does that do it for you, Ms. Representative Backer?
We're good. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Stolkas. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, for coming back. Yeah, I'll just make a quick statement. You know, my problem is with this is that we have a process for approving or modifying medications, and we're mostly lay people, or if not all of us are lay people here, and this needs to be properly vetted by medical experts when we make these type of changes. That was my concern about the first marijuana bill that passed, is we seem to be circumventing that that process, and that concerns me because of the interactions. So I'm probably going to be a no vote on this bill. Thank you.
All right. So, members, we're just about ready for a vote. I guess I would just say, Representative Grunhagen, I don't think we're doing that here today. This doesn't have anything to do with something a medical person would decide about the program. This is, I think, squarely within our purview as legislators to decide whether some kind of behavior that a person might commit should get them kicked out for lifetime from using a medication that would help them is the bottom line here. So with that, Representative Gomez, do you have a final word? And then we'll call the roll on the bill.
I just thank you for your time before the committee today, Madam Chair, and hope that folks can support enhancing a few protections for patients in a small way. So thank you.
All right, so I will renew the motion on behalf of Representative Gomez that House File 907 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice, Reform, Finance, and Policy. So with that, Ms. Niedernhofer, if you would please call the roll.
Chair Liebling?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt?
Aye.
Lead Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Representative Ackland?
Ackland, aye.
Representative Backer?
No.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bierman?
Aye.
Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Representative Damuth?
No.
Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen?
No.
Representative Keel?
No.
Representative Morrison? Representative Morrison? Representative Munson?
Munson, aye.
Representative Pryor?
Aye.
Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Ryer?
Aye.
Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Representative Wolgamott?
Aye.
That's 12 ayes and 6 nays.
All right, there being 12 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is re-referred. Thank you, Representative Gomez. But stick around. We have your next bill. So the chair will move House File 1023 to be also re-referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform, Finance, and Policy Committee. And Representative Gomez, you have an author's amendment, the A2. And would it be your preference to put that on and then discuss the bill, or do you want to discuss the bill first?
Madam Chair, can we please add the amendment and then discuss the bill?
All right. So the chair will move the A2 amendment to put the bill in the order in which the author would like to discuss it. So this will be a voice vote. If members would unmute yourselves. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
All right. So the motion prevails and the A2 author's amendment is adopted. And before Representative Gomez starts to discuss her bill, I just want to just note for members that we have two very similar bills on the agenda today, the other being House File 675, which is Representative Munson's bill. And so our intention is to move Representative Gomez's bill to the other committee because the issues in it needs to be vetted and to lay over the version from Representative Munson for possible inclusion in our finance bill. And so my understanding is the bills are pretty much the same. There might be very minor differences. So what I'd like to do is we can, I think, discuss them both at the same time. So I'm going to ask Representative Gomez to introduce a bill. I'll ask Representative Munson if he'd like to make some comments as well. And then we have testifiers who've signed up to testify on both bills, but I think we'll just ask them all to testify on both bills together. So, Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, House File 1023 is really a pretty simple bill, and I think it's kind of just logical to do this now. It responds to change in our state law in the establishment of our medical cannabis program and to changes in what we know about the medical applications of cannabis, what we've learned over the decades since this law has been in place. So like the federal government, Minnesota classifies or schedules controlled substances. There are five schedules Schedules two to, well, okay, I'll talk first about, basically the main difference between schedules one and two is really about medical application. So a schedule, a controlled substance that is classified under schedule one has been determined to have, quote, no currently accepted medical use in the United States. So a schedule two classification implies that the substance does have a recognized medical application in the United States. So like in schedule one, for example, you have substances like heroin and LSD. In schedule two, you have substances like methamphetamine and cocaine. And so schedules two through five really kind of speak to the potential for abuse of various substances, with those in higher schedules having a higher potential for abuse, and those in lower having a lower potential for abuse. But really, the difference between schedule one and two is really just about that medical application. And so obviously, as we discussed, we've had medical cannabis in place in Minnesota since 2015. I think the first medical cannabis program was in California. It was in the mid-90s. 35 states have full medical cannabis programs. And so what the main thing that this bill does is it moves marijuana from Schedule 1, no regarded medical application, to Schedule 2. And so, you know, I mean, as it exists right now, it's in conflict with law. It's in conflict with sort of logic, I guess I would say. So that's the main thing that the bill does. So schedule, the reason that, one of the reasons that this is important is because there are various references to schedules, to the ways that controlled substances are scheduled that show up in like the criminal code, some of the regulations around writing prescriptions, et cetera. So it sort of ends up being kind of like a way to talk about a grouping of substances elsewhere in our statutes. So moving it to Schedule 2, it provides basically an exemption to the sections that talk about prescribing and dispensing, administering controlled substances, because there are restrictions to those activities with respect to Schedule 2 drugs, which, you know, would again be in conflict with like reality. So the A2 amendment, what it does is it adds a little section to session law that directs the Commissioner of Health to apply to the DEA's Office of Diversion Control for an exception to the scheduling at the federal level. Because even if we take this common sense step to move cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, we'll still be in conflict with the scheduling that exists at the federal level. And so that amendment is really just kind of to request that exemption, which other states haven't done. And so it's going to be interesting to kind of see how that goes, because this is sort of in the like medical cannabis kind of cannabis world, this is this ongoing sort of tension that exists, right? Because of the way that it doesn't line up with reality. So that's what the bill does. I know that the testifiers are ready to add a little bit more context to that.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask Representative Munson to speak to the issue a little bit before I go to the testifiers. So Representative Munson, please go ahead if you'd like to talk about this for a bit as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Gomez, for presenting the bill. Yeah, my bill, I carried it last session as well. I'll just put a little Republican spin on this thing. I think we'll be probably talking about two different bills, but this really puts the law, the two laws we have in conflict, it straightens it out. You can't say that we have a medical cannabis program in Minnesota while also having this in Schedule 1, which says it has no medical value. When cocaine is a Schedule 2 because they use it in oral surgery, we have to recognize the fact that some people use medical cannabis for medical reasons. We have doctors authorizing them to do that. What's really important for me for asking for the federal exemption is you know, the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, you know, supports states' rights, and we should have a right to determine the use of these drugs in Minnesota. And we're asking them for this exemption that will also benefit medical cannabis manufacturers. One of the biggest complaints I hear about medical cannabis is that it's too expensive. And we have a lot of veterans with PTSD. We have people that are, you know, dying of cancer, and they want to reduce their opiate intake by substituting some cannabis that helps them with nausea, with pain. And we should allow that, but it's so expensive, and most insurance companies don't cover that. And one of the reasons why it's so expensive is because the manufacturers of medical cannabis can't deduct their business expenses on their federal taxes. If you have $2 million in sales and you have $1.9 million in rent, payroll, all your input costs, all of your expenses of the business, you can't deduct that from your gross revenue. So you end up paying 20% or 25% income tax on your entire gross revenue. So there's a major conflict, and that's because it's a Schedule I substance federally. They don't allow you to deduct those expenses. So we should be figuring out how we can lower the cost of medical cannabis, and asking for this exemption from the federal government will help us do that reinstate the state's rights. Now, there's, I believe, 35 other states or even more that have a medical cannabis program. So we're not the only ones doing this. But what makes Minnesota unique is that we're the only state that doesn't allow people to use the plant. You have to extract the oil, which makes it even more expensive. And so we should be doing more to lower the cost of cannabis, and that's going to be asking for this exemption at the federal level. And, of course, just putting our books in order here in the state and recognizing that it does have some medical value. So with that, thanks again to Representative Gomez and Representatives Garofalo and Hamilton on our side for supporting this bill, and look forward to a favorable vote.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Munson. So what I'm going to do now is go to the testifiers, and then I see we do have a question, but we'll, if it's okay with members, we'll hold the questions until we get through the testimony. So starting with Curtis Hanna. Mr. Hanna, are you here?
Yes, welcome. I'm here. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing this bill today. I greatly appreciate it. I do want to provide the context of the fact that over a decade ago, I petitioned the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy asking that they remove marijuana and non-synthetic THC from Schedule I in Minnesota's rules, which they oversee. As a result of that petition and this one subsequent petition, they decided that it was a fairly complex issue, that they preferred that the Minnesota legislature decide on their own rather than having a government agency make that determination. And because of that belief, they went to the Minnesota legislature and changed Minnesota statute to say that the Board of Pharmacy can no longer remove any substance from Schedule I in Minnesota. So as a result of that, I believe that Dr. Cody Weiberg is here and can verify this because he was the executive director of the Board of Pharmacy at the time of these petitions. Because of that, this is something that is squarely in the legislature's court and needs to be addressed by the legislature. It can't be determined by a state agency here. On the topic of the petition to the federal government, to the DEA to remove marijuana and non-synthetic THC from to exempt Minnesota's state authorized use of cannabis. I believe that this is an extremely important step for us to take. In a lot of ways, it's a very common sense follow-up to the passage of our 2014 law, which says to Minnesota patients that they are able to use this substance for the to benefit any sort of illness that we deem that they should be able to possess it for. And by not going to the DEA and asking this question, I believe that there's a negligence on the part of the state of Minnesota to say on one hand that, hey, patients, you can have this substance, but on the other hand, the state is saying we're not going to protect you from the federal government, let alone even ask the federal government if they would let us participate in this program. When the Federal Controlled Substance Act was passed in 1970, there was a provision in that original enactment that exempted the American Indian Church from peyote being in Schedule I. And that was done because of First Amendment religious freedom reasons. We also have, as Representative Monson mentioned, the 10th Amendment. And I believe that this would be a very important and necessary exemption from the Federal Controlled Substances Act to recognize that states get to decide issues of medicine. Once again, I really appreciate you hearing this bill today, and I urge a green vote or a yes vote.
All right. Mr. Hanna, and just could I ask you to just identify who you're with, if you're with anyone? I don't think you did that at the beginning.
Of course. I'm currently just a regular citizen lobbyist. I did co-found and sit on the board of both Minnesota Normal and Sensible Minnesota. But currently I'm just trying to make a more perfect union by engaging with the state legislature.
All right. Thank you so much for your testimony. Mr. Gallagher, welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you. Members, thank you for allowing me to testify about these bills in support of HF 675 and HF 1023. I think that this is a very important step to take because really it makes no sense to have marijuana and THC in Schedule I. I'm not sure that it ever made any sense. It certainly doesn't make any sense now because the defining characteristic of Schedule I as opposed to Schedule II is the idea that there is no currently accepted medical use. And I notice the word currently in that phrase that has been used at the federal and the state level for Schedule I. And obviously there is currently accepted medical use. We know the federal government has patents, medical marijuana patents. The federal government has provided medical marijuana to patients for decades. And we've had medical marijuana in Minnesota for literally hundreds of years. And it's been legal for most of that time. And it's been re-legalized, I guess, for medical purposes in recent years. But certainly there are currently accepted medical uses. When we look at the population of the United States, more than half of the population of the United States lives in a state where medical marijuana is now currently legal. And we have the medical cannabis program in Minnesota that is obviously legal. So the idea that there's no currently accepted medical use, it defies reason and all rationality. And so I think that if we want people to respect the law as something that it makes sense, that is rational, we should try to make the laws more rational and have them make more sense. And one really good way to do that right now would be to remove marijuana and THC from Schedule I and at least move it down to Schedule II. That would have a lot of wide-ranging impacts, but I think one of the biggest impacts would be just reconciling the law, rationalizing the law, making people have faith in the law. And by the way, I skipped my introduction. I'm a criminal defense attorney in Minneapolis. My name is Tom Gallagher. I'm on the board of Minnesota Normal, which is the state chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. I'm also associated with RAMP, Minnesota RAMP, which is Republicans Against Marijuana Prohibition. And I've written a lot on criminal law and marijuana law issues over the years. And maybe I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, Thank you very much, Mr. Gallagher. We appreciate your testimony. Okay, I'm going to now move to, we have two more testifiers on the list, and then we'll take a few brief questions, I hope, so that we can get to a vote on the bill, as that's what we're here for. So, Mr. McClellan.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my time.
Oh, we can't hear you, Mr. McClellan.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can. We could for the first moment.
Okay.
Go ahead.
My name is Patrick McClellan, and I was one of the small group of patients that fought for the medical cannabis law in 2013, and I'm a current patient. And I believe it's much better to try to change laws than break them. I was happy that we succeeded, but I was shocked to learn that I forfeited my Second Amendment rights in the process because of this Schedule I issue. I grew up hunting and fishing in Minnesota. In 2019, I tried to renew my carry permit. The instructor refused to let me take the class when I revealed I'm a medical cannabis patient. How can 40,000 Minnesotans lose their Second Amendment rights just because their doctor recommended a legal treatment? And so far, the legislature hasn't done anything. I believe the legislature not only has the authority to fix this, it has an obligation to protect the constitutional rights of its citizens and fix this issue. How is it acceptable that a grandfather can't go hunting with his grandkids, or a disabled person can't protect themselves in their own home just because they use medical cannabis instead of opioid painkillers? How can the state of Minnesota run a medical cannabis program and yet at the same time say cannabis has no medical value, causing me to lose my rights? I think that lawmakers who vote no on this bill should try to explain to me and others why this is acceptable. Please vote yes on this bill and protect my constitutional rights, and I can take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McClellan. We appreciate that. I just do want to give credit to Representative Rod Hamilton, who was really raised this issue quite a bit when we tried to make this change previously. So he's not on the committee anymore, but I know that he's quite a champion for that exact point of view about the Second Amendment. Okay, we have now Carl Olson.
Yes, my name is Carl Olson, and I'm from Iowa. I co-founded a group called Iowans for Medical Marijuana in 1990, and we incorporated in 2006, and I do a lot of lobbying, legislative and executive branch. It should go without saying that state-authorized use of cannabis creates an exemption from federal drug law, but if there's any doubt about that, there is a formal application in 21 CFR Code of Federal Regulations 1307.03 that would, it's presumed that state lawmakers do not intentionally create conflicts with federal drug law. So this application would put the state on record as having no intent to create conflict with federal drug law. So that would be the reason why you should do this. And just to correct something that was said, peyote was not exempt by statute. It was done as an administrative regulation. And that, of course, is what this application for exemption is. So it parallels that peyote exemption that was created in 1970. State medical marijuana laws didn't exist until the 1990s and yours in 2014. So it behooves the state to complete the process and apply for the federal exemption to express the thought that the state is entitled to this and that the state thinks it's doing the right thing and is not intending to create conflict with federal drug law. And that's it.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Olson. We appreciate your testimony. Okay. I have several members on the list. I've got Quam, Ackland, and Bonner. Representative Quam.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was wondering if the author could answer a couple of questions and clarify some things. The first being, in cannabis, how many current cannabinoids or molecules, compounds, et cetera, different ones are there that are being used for various treatments?
And Representative Quam, I don't know if she knows the answer or if Representative Munson does, but this seems a little far afield. Is this related to the to your decision on the bill here today?
Madam Chair, yes, it is, because I'm used to in medicines. I mean, we've gotten a lot of natural things. We've gotten things from certain tree barks. There's a lot of things that we do, but in order to have a controlled dosage to dosage, we focus on, you know, a refined, controlled amount of whichever compound or molecules you're using for the medication. And my understanding is there are multiple things found in cannabis that are useful for treating different conditions. And I'm trying to have a better understanding, because to me, logically, you would say we would use this component, that component, and those would be the ones that would be the medication, and those also would be the ones that we would put onto different schedules. And we all know that there probably needs to be more research what different concentrations and components, et cetera, might be in a variation of cannabis.
Oh, okay, Representative Quam, I think I understand the question, and I think maybe what we should do is if Cody Weiberg, who's the executive director of the Board of Pharmacy, is here. I think the question, as I understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, is really comes down to whether the bill is precise enough or whether it could be overbroad in terms of saying that that these compounds should be removed from Schedule 1 and put into Schedule 2, whether that's how I understand your concern. Am I correct there? And if Dr. Weiberg is here, maybe he could help us with that.
Madam Chair, it's of the philosophy that we would be moving component constituents that are found in different variations of cannabis for treatment for the simple reason that medicine is generally controlled concentrations, and if we're doing natural, plant products, there can be variability. And so I'm just trying to better understand what possible unintended consequences or risks by having a precedent that we're going to have the raw material.
Okay.
As opposed to a refined component.
Okay. Well, I see Representative Gomez wants to respond, and I think Representative Munson does as well. Representative Gomez?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Quam. I guess there are over 100 cannabinoids that have been isolated by scientists. And, some of them are more widely studied. Obviously, THC, which is, and CBD, are the two that I think that have had the most kind of like medical applications studied. But, you know, one of the things that we're going to hear, I hope, when we discuss adding flower to the program, is the fact that, you know, cannabis is like a very complicated plant in that way. It's a complicated substance, and it interacts. We have cannabinoid receptors in our brains, as you probably know, because you're like a scientist type. And so we in our current scheduling, there is a classification for synthetic THC, which was moved from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, I believe, in the 1980s, when there was a medication, like a synthetic, I think it was called Marinol, or there were a couple different names for it, but that was approved at the federal level. So at that point, you know, because it had a medical application, we moved it from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, which is literally all that we're talking about here. So cannabis science is a developing field. It's complex. This is a complex plant that humans have used for literally thousands of years to treat medical conditions. And personally, if anybody brought forward a modification to the scheduling that had 115 different cannabinoids listed in different schedules, I would say, you know, I don't see the wisdom of that from a policy perspective. So, you know, we can have more conversations about the sort of constituent kind of compounds in cannabis, which, as I said, is complex. But really, this is just saying the stuff that we're using medically, it shouldn't be in Schedule 1. It should be in the schedule where it indicates that it has, you know, generally regarded medical application.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Munson, you had your hand up, and did you have something you wanted to add to this to try to address that, or was that?
Yes, yeah, Madam Chair. And I did want to just briefly touch on what Representative Gomez mentioned, where, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is really pushing back against the medical cannabis industry, and it's for a good reason, because it does have medical benefit. And there, like she said, there's a, you know, synthetic THC is Schedule 2. And, you know, that's why we're trying to move this to the Schedule 2 as well. And the third thing I wanted to say was research has been limited on the different strains of cannabis in medical research because it's listed on the Schedule 1 federally. And there's, you know, a friend of our family invested money in a research facility to study specific strains for different oils to treat different cancers. And because of the financial restrictions, you know, the government basically froze his assets because it's, you know, illegal federally. We need to reassert state rights, and that's why we're trying to push this to the Schedule 2, because it has a medical reason. So that answers some of your questions.
All right. Thank you. So we're going to go to Representative Ackland, then Bonner, then we're going to vote on the bill. Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Representative Gomez or Representative Munson, I have a question. So right now, as far as prescribing for Schedule 1, I don't believe that there are any doctors who can prescribe heroin or LSD. So on Schedule 2, my understanding is there are limited number of physicians who are actually able to prescribe Schedule 2 drugs. And you, in the handout, they listed Adderall. Representative Gomez listed the Marinol, which is a synthetic THC. So my question is, in your bill, does it address this issue of prescribing? Because right now, only that under the DEA license that most providers have, I know they can do 3 through 5. I'm not sure. I think there's specialty physicians that have to get special permission to do Schedule 2s. And so I'm just wondering how that fits into your bill and if you address that in the bill at all.
So Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Liebling, and thank you, Representative Ackland. So Section 4 amends subdivision 152.11, provides, I'm just reading from the House Research overview, that for the purposes of prescription requirements, for the purposes of prescribing, so Section 4 covers the prescription requirements. Section 5 covers prescribing, dispensing, administering, and sale of the controlled substance. So I think that might address the issue that you're referring to, is that it basically, because as you said, right, there are restrictions on how you can sort of prescribe Schedule 2 controlled substances. And we provide an exemption from those limitations for cannabis and THC in this bill.
Okay, Representative Munson, sorry.
I just, maybe we could have somebody, Madam Chair, from the program, but it's my understanding that doctors can't actually prescribe medical cannabis, but they actually qualify you for the program because doctors would get in trouble for actually prescribing this because it's still federally illegal. And if someone from the program could confirm that, or Madam Chair, if you could.
Yeah, I think I can confirm that, but go ahead, Ms. Thilkus.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's exactly right. Healthcare practitioners register to be certifiers in our program, and they are certifying that a patient has one of the qualifying conditions on our list of qualifying conditions. They are not prescribing cannabis. Our patients, once qualified and enrolled in the program, meet with pharmacists at the cannabis patient centers to do their dosing of medication.
Okay, thank you. Does that answer your question, Representative Auckland?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bonner, last word here.
Thank you. A really brief comment, and then I do actually have a question for Dr. Weiberg that I hope will help give a little
I'm not sure he's here.
Clarity. Did we lose him?
I don't know. I haven't seen him, but anyway, go ahead.
All right. Well, we'll hope that he is. I just want to say briefly, you know, that I do realize that there's clearly a little bit of a disconnect in terms of common sense. And I know this bill is directly aimed at doing that. And as legislators, obviously, it is incumbent on us to rectify that situation and protect our citizens, particularly based on the conflict in the law. So I really appreciate Representative Gomez and Representative Munson bringing this forward. The question I had for Dr. Weiberg, and if he's around, is really if he could help us understand by moving from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, what real impact that would have or differences that would mean in terms of both prescribing and dispensing the medication. And I think that we kind of got into a little bit of the prescribing in the last answer, so maybe half of that has already been answered. But
so, Dr. Weiberg, if you're here.
I am.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Cody Weiberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy. So my understanding of this bill, having read through it, is it would move marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2. In terms of prescribing by licensed healthcare practitioners or dispensing by pharmacies, it won't have an impact. And it won't have an impact because marijuana will remain illegal under federal law, and it's a felony under federal law to sell and possess marijuana. So no pharmacy is going to be able to obtain marijuana to sell it, and they, even if they could, they wouldn't, because they would risk losing their DEA registration, potentially being prosecuted. So it would not have an effect. One thing though about the language that was mentioned, the change to section 152.11. I have a hunch this comes out of the conversations that I did have with Mr. Hanna about this. He's correct. The board three times actually denied his petition. We actually did it entirely on legal grounds. It's more complicated, but it gets down to this. Even if we had taken it out of the schedules, we don't have the authority to go and change the criminal sections of the statutes that would still have made it illegal. And I pointed out to him that 152.11 would still require it to be prescribed. So I have no concern that physicians and APRNs and things are going to prescribe it, or pharmacies are going to dispense it. But I do wonder a little bit if we put in language that says marijuana or controlled substances doesn't include marijuana, would someone else who's not a physician sell marijuana and basically say, well, you don't have to have a prescription for it, so I'm in effect dispensing it. You might want to think about that a little bit at next committee stops, as to whether someone who's not a licensed professional might think, well, I can now dispense this. But other than that, there's just no way, unless Congress changes federal law, that licensed prescribers are going to prescribe it, licensed pharmacies are going to dispense it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Weiberg. Okay, mm-hmm. Members, this has been a really good questions, good discussion, good testimony. I think we should just go ahead and vote on the bill. I don't know if we, I'm not even going to call on the authors because I think we've had a good discussion and we need to move on. So with that, I'm going to renew the motion that House File 1023 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Committee. And Ms. Niedernhofer, please take the roll. Chair votes aye.
Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt.
Aye.
Hewitt, aye. Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Representative Backer.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Representative Bonner.
Bonner, aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Damath.
Damath, no.
Damath, no. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Grünhagen.
No.
Grünhagen, no. Representative Kiel.
No.
Kiel, no. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Munson.
Munson, aye.
Munson, aye. Representative Pryor.
Aye.
Pryor, aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam, no. Representative Ryer.
Aye.
Ryer, aye. Representative Schultz.
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Wolgemut.
Wolgemut, aye.
Wolgemut, aye. 12 ayes and 7 nays.
All right, there being 12 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the Public Safety Committee. So with that, members, Representative Munson is now going to move House File 675 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the finance bill. And there is an amendment to that one as well, the A1 amendment. So Representative Munson is going to move the A1 amendment. And Representative Munson, do you want to just tell us just a bit what we're doing here?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So a very, very similar bill, and the amendment, I believe, puts it almost identical. I think it is identical language then. So I would make the motion to move the amendment. I just wanted to mention, too, briefly, I thought that my district was very supportive of medical cannabis, and so I did a pretty extensive survey, 10 questions that I had about 1,400 people respond to and fill out the survey. And over 95% of the district was supportive of the medical cannabis program. And the majority of those actually wanted the program expanded. So I think that even in a very conservative district like mine, people believe in medical cannabis, and they know people that use it, and it works. And so that's why I'm very supportive of this bill. So thank you, everyone, and make the motion to move the amendment.
All right. Thank you, Representative Munson. So this will be a voice vote. So if members would just unmute yourselves so we can adopt the amendment. So all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? And okay, so motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And so with that, thank you very much for bringing this, Representative Munson. And I think you're probably, what you've discovered from your own district, I wouldn't be surprised if that was very widely shared across the state. So with that, members, House File 675 is laid over for possible inclusion in the finance bill. And now we're going to move to House File 813. Representative Edelson, are you here?
I am, Madam Chair.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please go ahead. Oh, you can't go ahead because you're not on the committee. So the chair will move House File 813 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the finance bill. Please go ahead and present your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to be quick because I want to make sure we get to the testifiers. House File 813 is an iteration. This bill has come before the committee last year. And then prior to that, Representative Hamilton did add it as an amendment. So it was already in an omnibus bill before. So it's a pretty straightforward piece of legislation. It adds raw plants to the medical cannabis program. It's been noted here today that Minnesota is the only medical cannabis or only program in the U.S. that does not allow for plants. And what that means for patients is it ends up being very expensive. And so before us, what we know is that if we add plant to the program, like New York did back in 2018, that we can reduce costs by somewhat close to 50%. So I mean, I think that, you know, it is up what you, whether or not you believe in medical cannabis as a medicine is not really relevant necessarily right now, because we've already decided as a state that it was in 2014. What is before you today is whether or not you think it should be for the wealthy, or if it should be for, you know, everybody. I mean, right now it is not affordable and it is not covered by health insurance. And so I just want to, Madam Chair, move to our testifiers.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Edelson. So we have first testifier is Patrick McClellan. Mr. McClellan? And we did hear from Mr. McClellan before. If you could, you know, try to hone in on this particular issue, would be great. Thank you.
Yep, I certainly will. Can you hear me?
Yes, and do please reintroduce yourself as well. Okay. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony. My name is Patrick McClellan. I use medical cannabis to treat a rare form of muscular dystrophy called mitochondrial disease. In 2013, I testified in multiple hearings asking for safe, legal, and affordable access to a medical treatment suggested by my doctors at Gillette. I can't believe 8 years later, I'm still asking for the same thing. I lost my career and I'm on disability. My wife lost her job because she's going through cancer treatment and is also on disability. We are struggling to keep from going deeper in debt. My disease is untreatable. I use a cocktail of medications to treat the symptoms, muscle relaxers, painkillers, and anti-seizure drugs. I haven't used an opioid painkiller in over 8 years, thanks to medical cannabis. I have found that medical cannabis alone can treat all of the symptoms, but I can't afford the cost of the current program. So now I'm forced to not only ration my medical cannabis, but also the prescription meds that are critical for treating my disease. Adding flower option for patients will not only provide patients an affordable option, it'll lower the prices of all current products and do what the original bill was supposed to do. Keep patients like myself from buying our medication from people who smuggle cannabis in from other states. It's time to correct the mistakes of the past and fix this medical cannabis program. Thank you very much, and I can answer any questions somebody might have.
Thank you, Mr. McClellan. Please stick around in case we have any. Kyle Kingsley? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. My name's Dr. Kyle Kingsley. I'm a board-certified emergency medicine physician here in Minneapolis. I'm also the founder and CEO of Minneapolis-based Vireal Health, which is one of the medical cannabis companies that's been operating in Minnesota since 2014. The primary reason I stepped into the medical cannabis space from emergency medicine was to help provide alternatives to opioids, which has really been an ongoing problem in our state. In 2017, the last year that I have good data, 422 prescription overdose deaths involving opioids occurred in Minnesota. Moreover, in 2017, Minnesota healthcare providers wrote 41.0 opioid prescriptions for every 100 people. So very real problem still. I'm more convinced than ever that cannabis provides a real alternative to opioids and other pharmaceuticals in the setting of chronic pain and other serious medical conditions. Minnesota, which is normally known for leading the country in healthcare policy, is, in the case of medical cannabis access and affordability, trailing the country. Minnesota led the nation in expanding access to healthcare nearly 30 years ago with the passage of Minnesota Care. But today we lag much of the country with regard to affordable access to cannabis-based medicines. Minnesota patients with seizure disorders, cancer, Crohn's, and other chronic and terminal conditions have some of the highest out-of-pocket costs in the country for their medical cannabis. As a physician that has grown up, trained, and raised my family in Minnesota, I'm proud of our collective history with regard to public health. But over the last, over the 5 years of the medical cannabis program, I really do have deep concerns about cost of the medical cannabis program. A simple change to the program that's in line with every other real medical cannabis program in the country that allows THC is the addition of dry cannabis plant material. This can substantially reduce the cost of products for patients. Recent surveys have shown that 86% of surveyed registered medical cannabis patients in Minnesota reported price as the primary treatment barrier. Cost is by far the most common concern expressed by patients and cited as the major reason for leaving the program in the state. For medical cannabis programs, Minnesota is an extreme outlier by not allowing the use of flower. In fact, of the 36 states with THC medical cannabis laws, Minnesota is the only one that I could find that still does not allow the use of flower. This puts Minnesota behind the likes of Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Utah, all of which allow flower. In Minnesota's 5+ years of providing cannabis to patients, only 0.5% of the population is currently enrolled in the program. For other states that have been operating the programs for at least 3 years, the average enrollment is 2.4% of the population, or nearly 5 times Minnesota's adoption rates. Cannabis flower will drive down prices as patients are able to obtain the same amount of relief on a per milligram basis for on average half the price. Economies of scale will also drive down the cost of all products, including tablets, vaporizers, and tinctures, as such as those used by patients and children with epilepsy and other severe conditions. Cannabis flower will increase accessibility, especially for demographics that aren't currently able to afford current prices and may actually be more comfortable with the use of cannabis flower in lieu of pills, capsules, or vaporizers. The addition of cannabis flower to the legal program may also squeeze the illicit cannabis program, the illicit cannabis market, which is currently accessed by approximately 10% of the Minnesota population. Bringing dried cannabis flower into the light of the legal medical program keeps patients under doctor supervision using safe, lab-tested cannabis of known quality and potency. As a physician and advocate for sound public health policy, the cost-benefit analysis of this issue falls firmly on the side of adding dry cannabis flower to the medical cannabis program. I apologize, Madam Chairman, for the background noise.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Kingsley. Appreciate your testimony. And then we have Kim Kelsey.
Yes.
Welcome. Please just, yes, we can. Please state your name. Tell us if you're representing anyone and go ahead and tell us your testimony. 2 minutes, okay, please.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Sorry, members of the committee. I represent my son. I'm a mom. I have a number, 65,000. Please remember this number. Our son, Alec, is 29 years old. He suffers from life-threatening seizures, cognitive challenges, and neuropathy resulting from a near-fatal bout with encephalitis when he was 4 years old. He beat an 18-day coma and, being on a ventilator, learned to relearn how to walk, talk, eat, swallow, etc., despite his prognosis. Oxygen deprivation left him with bilateral brain damage, the source of his seizures and cognitive challenges. For 25 years, it's been my mission to try to find a cure for Alec. Unlike any other option or therapy that I have uncovered, medical cannabis offered an extreme life-changing upside with virtually no downside, a plant derivative with no real negative side effects. Not trying was not an option. So my new mission was to help get the Minnesota cannabis program passed into law. In a year and a half, I, alongside other parents, patients, advocates, and our big daddy and the mommy lobby, we visited the Capitol countless times. We were present at every vote, testimony, press conference, wrote and called and met with hundreds of congresspeople and influencers. And on July 1st, 2015, at 12:01 a.m., Alec was the very first patient to receive his medical cannabis in the state of Minnesota for this life-saving medication. Alec takes the purest and most expensive form of medical cannabis, which is CBD prominent violet tincture oil. We administer this orally by syringe 3 times a day. I'm thrilled to tell you that it has been absolutely life-changing for Alec and our family. After just a week of being on it, adding it to his other anticonvulsant medications that he also takes, we were noticed his level of awareness and the speed of his processing increased dramatically. We attribute this to a reduction in his underlying subclinical seizure activity. In other words, his brain was calming down. After months of tracking his seizure activity, we were able to document a measurable reduction in the number and frequency of seizures that he was having. He remains on the CBD violet tincture along with the anticonvulsants. He is not seizure-free, still has severe seizures. However, his quality of life has been so dramatically improved, we can't imagine life without it. We believe his brain is healing, and now he is now more present than ever. As Alec would say, it is frickum awesome. He thinks that's a swear word, but we haven't told him it's not. That's the good news. Unfortunately, the cost of the medication is a serious financial challenge. To date, remember the number I said at the beginning? We have spent $65,000 in 5.5 years, cash. Because it is still a Schedule I drug, no insurance, Social Security, medical assistance, or anything can be used to subsidize the cost. It has hurt our family financially over the past 5.5 years. We have paid so much in credit card cash advances on credit cards, et cetera. Oh, no. Oh, come on. I'm sorry. I thought I lost you. And for cash advances on credit cards, et cetera, we run a small family business that we started for Alex, something that we could do with him on a daily basis and keep him safe from seizure activity. It hasn't been easy, but we have no choice but to find a way each month to buy Alex medicine. He cannot continue to improve and enjoy his incredible quality of life without this medicine anymore. As you consider proposals for controlling overall medication costs for Minnesotans, medical cannabis needs to be included in the discussion. It is medicine. My heart breaks for so many patients who are qualified and would benefit from this only if they could afford it. Anything you can do to help lower the cost for us and others is meaningful. The addition of flower is necessary to the program and would help all of the qualified Minnesota patients. Please vote yes on HF 813 for us and countless Minnesota patients. Thank you for allowing me to share our story, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Kelsey. I was here then when you got this passed, and I remember it, and thank you very much for your activism. I'm sure it's helped many, many people besides your son. Okay, we have several questions. First, I'm going to just, members, we can run over just a little bit, but it would really, we normally do stop this committee in 8 minutes, and so I think we should try hard to get to a vote. But so we have Munson, Ackland, and Freiberg. Representative Munson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out that there are actually more Republican co-authors of this bill than there are Democrat authors. There's 7 Republicans and 6 Democrats. So go team. I also just wanted to show the survey results from my district, because I know that this was got a lot of attention down in my area, where 75% of the respondents of the 1,400 people believe that we should be allowing the actual cannabis flower, the bud, to be legalized, whereas only 22% said it should stay limited to the oil, and 3% didn't support the cannabis program at all. So I just wanted to offer my information from my district and why that I'm supportive of this. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Munson. And members, I misspoke. We are not voting on the bill. It's going to be laid over. So Representative Ackland.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And for Dr. Kingsley, I have a question. I just want to make sure my information is current. From what I've read, the medical cannabis it uses the CBD oil only. And that's the part that would control pain or prevent seizures, et cetera. And I just wanted to make sure I'm correct about that. Because I understand the THC part of it is the part that would give a person a high. I just want to clarify that I'm right on that one way or the other, because my question to you then becomes, if that's correct, if we talk about pure medicines and we go through so much effort to make sure that what we're giving patients is exactly what they're getting, it seems to me if there was a way to improve the cost without including the whole flower, that we could still have that pure CBD, which is giving the pain relief, giving the seizure relief, and still somehow find a way to reduce the cost. I just wonder if that would be something that you would actually welcome and find it as the best alternative.
Dr. Kingsley.
Madam Chair, Representative Ackland, thank you for the question. Our experience has been that actually THC for most patients is a major contributor to pain relief. similar to opioids, which, you know, have side effects that, you know, get people obtunded and can get people, you know, quote unquote, high. THC, the highness from THC, we actually consider a side effect. But for many patients, actually the THC dominant, so more THC than CBD in the oil or capsule, is actually preferred and more beneficial for most pain patients. So I am a big fan of THC as a pain medication in the setting of chronic pain, especially if you're swapping out opioids. Our experience is also that, you know, you really have to step beyond the cannabinoids, and this concept of the entourage effect, the whole plant, really seems to not only bring additional benefit to patients as far as symptom relief, but even more prominently, it seems to decrease the side effects for folks. And so if people take Marinol, purified THC, it's a pretty miserable medication with a lot of side effects. If they smoke whole cannabis flower with the same amount, equivalent amount of THC, there's often much less in the way of side effects. So we're a big fan of kind of the whole plant extract, really just the whole plant really brings something to bear as far as tolerance from patients and better outcomes.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Kingsley. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, thank you for your hard work on this issue, Representative Edelson. I certainly support making medical cannabis more affordable in Minnesota, because it's clearly not right now. I'm not opposed to this bill, and just to be clear, I will likely support it. But I do wonder if we're undermining the medical rationale behind the medical cannabis program by allowing people to smoke as part of the program. You know, I try to look at the medical cannabis program differently than the discussion around adult use of cannabis. I mean, if we legalize the adult use of cannabis, allowing people to smoke should certainly be a part of it, as long as protections like the Clean Indoor Air Act are followed. However, if we want the medical cannabis program to be based on sound medicine, you know, we want to follow best medical practices. And it's pretty clear that breathing smoke into one's lungs is not a healthy activity. So, I mean, as I said, I'll likely support this bill, but I am curious how you would respond to just to that point, Representative Edelson.
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, you know, I think since we have a medical doctor here that works in the area, I'll go ahead and call on Dr. Kingsley.
All right, Dr. Kingsley.
Madam Chair, Representative Freiberg, very good question. And when I stepped into this space as a physician, obviously I had reservations about combusting and inhaling anything. But interestingly, my mind was changed in 2018. There's a well-known periodical in the medical realm called Chest Journal, which is kind of the lung medicine periodical. And they basically did a kind of a comprehensive analysis of the data that existed at the time, which was a fair amount of data. And their conclusion was that, I'll quote it here, the weight of evidence from well-designed epidemiological studies does not support the concept that habitual marijuana use in the manner and quantity in which is customarily smoked, when adjusted for tobacco use, is a significant risk factor for the development of lung cancer. So essentially what they found is, through, you know, many tens of thousands of patients, they did not see the expected increase in lung cancer due to marijuana smoking. It's probably two factors there. The cannabinoids themselves seem to have anti-cancer properties. And also, cannabis utilizers are not chain smoking cannabis all day, every day. So there is a decreased amount of smoke that they're inhaling. But for standard use, kind of within normal realm of use, we don't see the lung cancer that we would expect if this were tobacco. That was a big, that really moved me to much more ambivalent towards smoking. And now kind of the price considerations really have kind of overwhelmed my thought process there.
All right. Final question from Representative Grunhagen.
I know we're running out of time, so thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to, I'll just make a statement. The I have a very liberal a retired doctor in my district. I know he doesn't vote for me, and he and I disagree on just about everything. But he does support not running the cannabis issue through the legislature. He said that's not the proper place, so he and I agree on that. And I find myself in agreement with Representative Freiberg as far as smoking the marijuana. We had strong testimony against that from experts when we passed the original cannabis bill. So I just wanted to state that, you know, there are even liberal medical experts that strongly disagree with that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. I think this just goes to show, as we've seen in this hearing, this is not a liberal versus conservative issue. This is an issue about patients and health, and as we often talk about in this committee, access to medication. So thank you, everyone, for your participation. Thank you to the testifiers. So House File 813 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the finance bill. Thank you very much, Representative Edelson, and everyone for your testimony. We appreciate that. So members, thank you for helping bring this to a close, more or less on time. Just want to mention that tomorrow we will be taking up the issue of dental care in Minnesota, especially in our public programs. And I look forward to seeing everyone tomorrow. Thank you. We are adjourned.